Welcome to CCC Highland Square. So good to be with you guys. A special welcome to all the dads in the house. Can we get a round of applause for the fathers in the place? Love you, dads, holding the world together. Everyday heroes. Love it. Also, special welcome if you're a guest, if you're new. If you have any questions, we've got a welcome table in the back, and we've got some friendly folks back there that are ready to meet you and say hi and answer any questions that you guys have about what goes on here. We're going to take our offering now, so deacons, come on down and serve us. Also, junior hires, middle schoolers, you guys can be dismissed. We've got middle school happening down in the gym, so guys, go have fun and enjoy that time. Also, a couple other things going on to want to direct your attention to. The first is we got a young adults hangout coming up on June 30th, Rails and Trails happening. It's a train ride up to Independence, and then you get off the train and ride bikes back. So you can sign up online, you can sign up electronically, or you can sign up at the back table, but young adults, go hang out. Get to know some people, widen your sphere of relationships here. It's what we love to see happen. And so Turner and Christy, who lead a young adult small group, are leading this, and that's why they're doing it, because they want to connect you guys together. So go hang out, have a good time. If you don't have a bike, you can actually rent it at the event. Also, here's a save the date. Our next marriage intensive is coming up August 29th through September 2nd. The first one we did several months ago, tons of fruit coming out of it, like legit changed marriages happened at the first marriage intensive. And so we're doing it again. So Jacob and Susan are leading this one. And so if you are able to do, just kind of pencil it into your calendar right now, save those days, and then in the weeks to come, we'll have like official signups for you. But right now, it's just to save the date. So that's it by way of announcements. Hope everybody's doing well. I know everybody got a little bit wet on the way in. So praise the Lord that it is dry here. Okay, so we start a new series this week. You guys know that we did the Beatitudes for a good long time. And then Pastor Coach Boyd took us through John 13 and the vine for 2 weeks. And so we're leading in with a new one. It's entitled Proceed with Caution. And that will make sense by the end of today. But really, what it is we're going to look for several weeks. It's kind of a dive into a Christian's understanding of technology and advancement and how we should or should not engage with that, right? Because we live in an ever-changing, ever more technologically complicated world. And as followers of Jesus, we ought to be reflective and thoughtful about that and how we engage in it and how we see it and understand it. So that's what we're going to lead into this morning. So proceed with caution. What does that mean? Well, let's draw this out a little bit. Let me tell you a story from, I think it was in my early 20s. In my early 20s, I was single, had a lot of time on my hands, didn't have a wife, didn't have kids. And one of the things that I love to do, particularly after the sun went down, is I love to climb things, right? I lived in the city. It's amazing what buildings you can climb, right? What structures are available just to head up and see what the view is like from up top, right? Love climbing things. In my early 20s, I wasn't married, didn't have kids. I lived with a bunch of guys. And what I would frequently do, like this would be probably like anywhere between 10 p.m. and 1 a.m., is we'd be sitting in the living room, bored, and then one of us would say, hey, let's go do something, and we'd go do something. Well, I had been scouting out for a while now, right? You know when you drive and you see off in the distance those like massive metal structure towers? You guys know those things? You just seem like, wow, those are really tall. I had scouted out in, I think it was Northampton, right off of Hudson, was that Hudson Drive, I think-ish. I had scouted a couple of these massive metal structures that were behind a mini mart. And I thought, at some point, I want to go climb those. So there's one night, I'm hanging out with the guys, and I said, hey, we're bored. Let's go up into Northampton. Let's climb this thing, right? So it's after hours, sun's down, 11 o'clock. We pull into the mini mart, and we get out, and we make our way. Right? Everybody's dressed in dark so nobody can see us. And we make our way through a field, through the woods, through the field. And we get to this place where the tower is, and it's surrounded by a fence. Now, if you've ever done this before, you know there's always a way in. Right? And so you walk around the fence and you see, okay, if we pull up the fence here, we can crawl under there. And that's what we did. And so we found our way in. So we moved our way closer to the tower. It was my idea. If it's your idea, you have to go first. So the tower itself was on a 3-foot high concrete slab. So I climbed up on the concrete slab, and then I went and did what you do when you climb something, you grab a hold of it. Okay, and as soon as I grabbed a hold of it, it was like the 4th of July was happening right in front of my face. Like this massive explosion of sparks and light that radiated a whole bunch of heat on my face and scared me to death, right? Sometimes things startle you such that, like, I've had several things happen where you have to, like, take a step back and think, am I alive right now? Is my heart beating? Yes. Can I feel everything? Yes. Right? And so we realized very quickly that this tower was electrified with a whole bunch of voltage going through it that I just exposed when I, as a ground, touched it. Okay? And then so we realized this wasn't going to work for us, and so we went, with our tail between our legs, we went through the fence back out. And here's what we realized as we climbed through the other side of the fence that we missed on the way in, is that there were signs on the fence all over the place that said, danger, high voltage, right? Somehow in our excitement, we missed the signs. I don't know how, right? Danger, high voltage, which means don't touch, don't go near, stay away, right? Get as far away from this thing as you can, otherwise it's going 4th of July right in front of you, right? And just a side note real quick, when we got back to the house, I realized, like, my hand ached. It was like my hand was on fire. And finally, when I got into the light, I looked, and my four fingers here, there was, you could see where the arc of electricity went through my fingers, in, out, in, out, in, out, in, out, burn holes, like where the skin was burned on my fingers, right? And so for the next week or two, like my hand just ached. But I learned when the sign says danger, high voltage, don't touch it, okay? Now, regarding technology and advancement of all kinds in society, as people, there are all sorts of approaches to technology and advancement. And there's like a continuum, right? And on one polar end spectrum of the continuum are the people that say, regarding technology and advancement, they say, danger! Stay away, right? Don't get near it. It's evil. It's bad. It only does bad things. It's going to hurt you. Stay away from the thing, whatever it is, okay? There are those people. Now, then this is going to be a caricature, but we're all familiar with the Amish as a people group, right? We know the Amish to be people that choose to live life as if it were 200 years ago, right? An agrarian life, working with their hands. And the caricature that we have of Amish is that they avoid technology of all kinds. They don't. They engage with it, just not to the level that we do. But let's, right, the Amish are the caricature picture of the person that says, danger, technology will only do bad things, so stay away from it, okay? And it's not just the Amish that take that approach. It's all sorts of new kinds of people that are out there doing that same thing in not Amish ways, okay? Now, on the other end of the spectrum are people at the complete other end who want to wholesale adopt any and all kinds of advancement, right? Any new platform, any new app, any new technology, any new, like, whatever it is, they want it because it's new and they're excited by that, right? I had a conversation several months ago with an engineer who is kind of a futurist, right? He thinks about the future quite a bit, and he described the future for me from his engineering lens. And he said, Brian, in the future, he said, what our kids are going to walk into is so different. Their experience is going to be so different. And he described it. He said, they're going to live in an age where, like, they don't drive cars anymore, where cars are all self-driving. It's going to happen, right? And he said, and, you know, like, technology, we have watches now that connect us to the internet. He says, we're going to have technology that is more invasive than, it's like going to become a part of us. And this technology that becomes a part of us is going to be connected to all other kinds of technology, right? The Internet of Things, where we are connected to our things beyond just a device, right? And he's describing this future, and there's no amount of caution. There's no amount of, like, he's saying, this is the way it is. Get on board, because this is what's happening. And he seemed really excited about it, right? And there's all kinds of people that whatever the thing is, like, they're waiting in, like, a 3-hour line to get the thing, just because that's who they are. Not reflective, not thinking about it, just excited about any and all technology, okay? So there's the continuum in front of us. And all of us are somewhere on this map. Now, the question is, as followers of Jesus, where ought we to be regarding our approach to, engagement with, thinking about, and operating in and with technology and all of the advancement things that are happening all around us? Ought we to be, might we need to consider becoming an Amish community, right? Let's put it on the table. Maybe we need to put some focus groups together, right? Maybe we need to be here, or maybe we would say, no, as followers of Jesus, we should all land somewhere over, or where in between should we be as his disciples, right? And that's the question that I want to answer for you. I want to tell you exactly where we should be, right on the spectrum. Are you ready for that? Thank you, Sarah. I know that was Sarah because she's the only one that answered me. Okay, so I'm gonna tell you where we should be on the spectrum in just a moment. But before I do that, what I want to do is I want to give us maybe God's heart for, or like how God sees technology and advancement, and dive into the scriptures a tiny bit. We'll do this for several weeks to come, but I want to dive in and just get a cursory understanding, overview of how we should see technology and advancement in society. Can we do that before I tell you where we should be? I'm going to tell you authoritatively where we should be. I'm excited about that. I know you are too, okay? But here, just a quick overview before I do that. Here's just three things. Here's the first. In Genesis chapter 1 and 2, God creates human beings, that's all of us, to be his image bearers, which means that, and we've talked about this at length, right? This is just a review, that he put us on this created world to be his ruling representatives, that who God is as the ruler and the king over all things, he put us as his vice regents, right, his under rulers, and this is our sphere to exercise dominion, right? He put us here to rule and subdue, right? And there's a whole bunch of things that go under the category of rule and subdue, right? We are to beautify and adorn creation itself, right? Creation is supposed to look better, sound better, be more than it was, because you and I are there doing the things that we're supposed to do as those who are reflecting God's image of ruling in that place, right? That's a high calling. That's huge, right? Which is why we value the human life. We are different than everything else on the planet, right? There's a value here because of who God has made us to be. We're supposed to rule. And as we rule, right, it is part of our discipleship that we would get better at ruling creation. Right? I don't know what you think discipleship is. I think sometimes as Christians, all we think about discipleship is I do less bad and I do more good. And I understand more of the Bible, right? It is so much, like those things are true, but it's so much more than that. Like part of discipleship is that we grow as kings and queens ruling over creation itself, right? And the ways that we rule over creation are the ways that we also bless each other. So that's part of what God has for us. So in this room, there's a whole bunch of different kinds of people who are gifted in different kinds of things as rulers because God has made you that way, right? Some of us in the room are creatives, right? You have the ability to make things that have never been made before. And some of you are painters, and some of you it's with technology, and some, right? All sorts of creativity in this place. And it's the kind of thing that, like, when you walk into a space where that person has done a creative thing, the space is better because they did it, right? You're like, you walk in and you see the painting, you're like, wow, this room's okay, but that painting just, like, it makes this awesome, right? There's the creativity that it took to make that thing. It's an advancement in that space that you as a human being made happen because you're creative and you painted it, right? You made it better. And we all enjoy that. Some of you aren't necessarily super creative. We're all somewhat creative, but some of you are more of like the efficiency type. You want to look at things and see how to make them better, faster, and less waste, and take less time, right? You are the efficiency person, and that's how uniquely God has wired you as a ruler over creation. And everywhere you go, things get more efficient because you bring it there, and that's good. right? And some in the room, we'll call you, like, you're the collaborator kind of person, which means you like to bring together a whole bunch of different gifted people, put a big problem or challenge in front of them and say, hey, let's solve this thing together and let's make this happen, right? That's a powerful gifting, to bring human beings, image bearers of God, together and say, what could we do about this? And then try to do something, right? Well, we all have different ways that we go about doing this thing of bearing the image of God as it pertains to ruling over creation, right? And we're supposed to get better at it. We're supposed to advance in these things, and that is good. Okay, that's the first kind of biblical overview of understanding how we should engage with creation and advancement, and technology as a subset of that. Okay, here's the second thing. I want to take you to Genesis chapter 4. In Genesis chapter 4, it's so early into the human story, right? It's so early. It's right after the fall in Genesis chapter 3, right? After chapter 3 is Genesis chapter 4. And what we see is, like, how things are moving on from the garden. And there's some really interesting things here that if we just read over it real fast, we might miss some of the deeply theological things that are happening, right? And they're good. So here we go. Genesis chapter 4, starting in verse 17. Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch. When he built a city, he called the name of the city after the name of his son, Enoch. Okay, so really early on, right, the population is already growing. Adam and Eve, and like, they're having tons of kids, and their sons and daughters are having tons of kids. Everybody's living a lot longer, right? Different time, different environment back then, right? So the human population is growing, and Cain decides to build a city. What is a city? A city is a collection of people that choose to live together in a higher ordered functionality, right? To live in a city, it's like people choosing to, like, enter into more a specificity of their giftings to serve all the people around them. And when people do that, things advance, right? A city is an advanced kind of dwelling. And so already in Genesis chapter 4, we see a city emerging, right? They're not hunting and gathering for thousands of years. Like cities are already starting to develop, right? But there's more development happening. Verse 18. To Enoch was born Irad, and Irad fathered Mehujael, and Mehujael fathered Methushael, Methushael fathered Lamech, right? Verse 19. And Lamech took two wives. The name of one was Ada. The name of the other was Zillah. Ada bore Jabal, right? Now we're going to talk about what brother Jabal is doing. And he, Jabal, was the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. Okay? So Jabal is making tents and he's raising livestock. Now consider this, that a tent is a developmental advance in complexity beyond Jabal choosing to live in a, let's say, a cave, right? A tent requires moving parts and pieces that require someone to figure out those moving parts and pieces to make them, to fit them together and to make them work, right? And the developmental benefit that a tent is over a cave is that brother Jabal here is a tender of the flocks, right? He's raising animals. Now, back in this time, apparently when he's doing this raising of the flock work, there aren't a million farms out there where this guy's growing soybeans and this guy's growing corn and that guy's got hay, and he can, like, be stationary in his cave and import all these things for his animals to eat, right? That's not going to work because it's not there. And if Jabal were to stay in the cave and his animals were to graze the lands around him, they would quickly be eaten and then continually eaten. The environment would be degraded. There'd be no more food for his animals, right? So brother Jabal figures, I can't live in the tent. I can't stay in one place. I've got to create something that allows me to dwell, right? Not out under the elements, but to be protected, but also to have it mobile so that I can move around with my animals and find the places where they can actually eat food, right? That is a creational advancement that brother Jabal came up with, and he made it happen, right? And it's not as if the scriptures are saying, oh no, bad things are going on. Danger. He left the cave and now he's making tents. That's a wrong move. We're moving in the wrong direction. No, it's just saying this is what he's doing. It's good, right? Why? Because this is what people are supposed to do. We do things and we figure out how to do things better, right? He's making it happen right now. Right? One of the other reasons why he's raising livestock now is because also we have cities, right? And now he's going to supply these cities with some of his livestock that he's raising. So we have a developing and an advancing economy happening right in front of our eyes in Genesis chapter 4, right? It's this rule and subdue, like multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, rule over it. It's all happening like immediately in the story of people, right? And it continues, verse 21. His brother's name, right, Jabal's brother's name was Jubal, right? A lot of creativity among the parents there in the naming of their kids. We can speculate what the third son would be called, right? Okay, but anyway, Jubal was the father. Now, don't miss what's happening here, right? If you just read this and skip over it, you're skipping over some amazing advancements in humanity. Right here in Genesis 4, right? His brother's name was Jubal, and he was the father of all those who play the lyre and the pipe. So Jubal, right? This unique image-bearing creation of God, somehow unique to him, has music in his heart and in his soul. And it needs to come out, right? Something like what God puts in us, like when we're fully alive walking within him, it has to come out. We will find a way for it to come out. That's how he made us. And God put in Jubal's heart this need for music, because God loves music, right? All around his throne, music is happening, right? And so this guy has music in his heart, but here's the problem. God didn't create trees to produce musical instruments, right? In the garden, the trees are producing food to eat. But there are, like, you can't just climb a mountain and discover a musical instrument. You have to make it, which means that you've got to, figure stuff out. You got to figure out that if you take strings of varying width and dimensionality and tie them at a distance at different tensions, they make different sounds, right? And then you got to figure out scales. And then you got to put these, this is crazy. You got to make an instrument out of nothing so that the music that is in your heart can find a device through which you can make it made manifest to other people. This is nuts. And Jubal is advancing human civilization by creating music and devices to actually play the music, right? And the scriptures seem to be saying, this is good. This needs to happen. We need music. We need more instruments. We need to plug the instruments in so it can be heard louder, right? This is a good thing, especially electric guitars, because we all love those, right? This is a good thing that needs to happen, let alone, right, the electric guitar pedal that makes it sound even better, right? That's a positive development for most of us, okay, right? So we have music in the heart of an image bearer, and they're creating mechanisms called instruments for the music to be heard, right? This is the coolest stuff ever. But it continues right in verse 22. Right here, the genealogies are continuing. And then Zillah, right, also bore Tubal-Cain. He, Tubal-Cain, was the forger of all instruments, or also tools, of bronze and iron. Right? So already in Genesis chapter 4, we've got the first blacksmith. Which means that other people are exploring the earth. They're already finding deposits of minerals and metals. They're finding ways to mine it out, and they're taking it to a guy like Tubal-Cain, who is somehow, through trial and error, has realized that if you heat it to certain temperatures, it becomes malleable, and you can make stuff out of it, right? And this, they're just figuring it. There are no manuals. There's no Google. There's no resource. There's no Siri to say, Siri, how do I make an anvil and make a sword out of it, right? They're just figuring it out. How are they doing that? Because God put it in our heart to do that. Because we're amazing, and it's all happening right now, right? So we have a blacksmith who is figuring out how to make tools out of metal. What is he making tools for? Well, we already know, right? We're making tools because people are already building cities. And you can't build cities unless you have tools. So we got the blacksmith who's helping with that. What else do we need tools for? Tubal Cain, the blacksmith, why are you making these tools? Well, because we got his other brother here who's making musical instruments. And the more tools you have, the more advanced you can make the instruments, which means the musician can make the sound come out more in a way that he hears it and feels it, right? Everybody's working together here, advancement, development, and it seems to be going in a good direction, right? We also need tools because we got people who are making tents and figuring out a new way to grow food for cities, and they need to make more tents for it, and tools make that better. Right? And he's making tools for whatever other human beings come up with that they want to try to do. Right? So, human beings are image bearers of God, called to rule and subdue and to beautify and adorn and advance creation. Right? Because creation is advanced when we're ruling over it. That's what God says. Next thing is, in Genesis chapter 4, early on, development is happening, and the scriptures seem to be saying, this is a good thing, we were made for this, and here's the last thing that I think will just help us flavor our understanding of technology advancement and how we as Christians should engage in it, right? Here's the last piece is this, that the story of God and people, right, this whole thing, the scriptures, it starts chapter 1. It starts and into chapter 2. In the very beginning, it starts in a garden. There's a certain level of complexity that a garden is and can grow into, and it's very cool. I love gardens. They're alive. They're beautiful. It's a celebration of all that God has made and that we can do in making it even cooler, okay? Gardens are awesome. What God starts in a garden then moves out of the garden and develops, right? And it moves and it progresses and it advances. Do you know where the story of God and people ends? Doesn't end back in a garden. We don't come full circle. We don't end back in Eden. We end in a city, right? Where some of the elements of the garden, the tree of life and the river that flowed out of Eden that brought life to all the land around it, those elements are in the New Jerusalem, right? But it's different than the garden. It's better than the garden. A development, a progression has happened from the garden in the beginning to the city of God that comes down and rests on the earth where God himself will dwell. What God starts in the garden, he ends in a city, and you and I have the unique opportunity to be a part of that story. And we see it happening in Genesis chapter 4. And that same story should be playing out in 2019 in and around Akron, Ohio, through all of us, right? It is a privilege to be a part of this advancing story of God. Privilege to be human. So now, with that flavoring some of our understanding, let's go back to the question regarding technology and advancement and all of those societal development kinds of things. Where should you and I land on the continuum? Do you want to know? Because if not, we can go right back into worship right now. Okay, I think one person wants to know. Okay, here it is. I'm going to tell you where we should land. We should land wherever the Lord wants you to land. Wherever you feel in your conscience before the Lord, wherever you want to land, that's the place for you. Because here's what I know to be true. There are some Amish people, and I've met a lot of them. Not a lot. I've met some. I want to clarify that. A little bit of an overstatement. I've met some. I've met some Amish people whom I believe are walking in the epicenter of God's will for their life. They're honoring Jesus, they're doing the work that they're supposed to do, and before the Lord, in their conscience, this is regarding technology and advancement, they're where they need to be. And to that I say, you keep doing that. I love that. I also know people, right, these are the people, I know some people over here that are give me more, give me all, right? They take on all kinds of new, they're going to be the first person in the self-driving car. They're going to be the first person in the rocket that goes to, they just want that. They crave that advancement of technology. there are some people here who are in the absolute epicenter, like right smack in the middle of God's good purposes and will for their life. And it's good for them to be here. Here's what I also know. There are some people who say regarding technology and advancement, danger, stay away. They are absolutely and wholesale outside of God's will and purpose for their life. And there are people over here who adopt all kinds of new technology who are also outside of God's will and purpose for their life. So the answer is, where ought we to be? We ought to be in the place where God wants us to be. And in order to do that, we're going to have to become a discerning people, right? So regarding advancement in technology, you don't proceed with danger, stay away. We don't proceed with, give me all of it. We proceed with caution, which another word for that in the Bible is discernment. That we need to grow to be reflective, thinking, growing in wisdom people so that we can wisely and rightly navigate this ever-growing and complexity world that we live in. And so that we, as unique creations of God, can engage with the things that we're supposed to engage in and abstain from the things that we're supposed to abstain from regarding these new things that are coming out. Now, that's what we're going to dive into in the next several weeks. But now for this morning, I just want to give you a couple examples. But here's the question that we have to ask regarding any new technology, any new platform, any new advancement. Here's the first question that I think we need to ask if we're going to grow to be a discerning, wise, reflective people who actually go about this creational living thing in the way that God made us to go about it. First question is this. Is this piece of technology or advancement, whatever the thing is this thing advancing the purposes of God in my life, or is it detracting from God's purposes for my life? That's it, right? Is this advancing God's purposes for my life, or is it detracting from it, right? And because the continuum is open, nobody can tell you. We have to be, personally, each of us, wise, discerning, reflective people. That's part of our discipleship process, so that we, before the Lord, can navigate the answer to these questions uniquely and personally, right? Discernment is needed. So proceed with caution, discernment. Now, here, I want to give you an example, just so that, because sometimes we got to go concrete just to make sense of some abstract things that we're talking about. Here, this an example from my childhood. And my childhood was an age of incredible technological advancement. It was a space age of new things coming out, right? One piece of technological advancement that I remember from my youth is what we referred to back then, we used to call it the TV dinner. Anybody, hands up if you remember what a TV dinner is, right? Some of us. Okay, here's what the TV dinner was. The TV dinner was, you would find it in the freezer section of your store. It was a part cardboard, part plastic tray that had individual compartments for different individual kinds of food. Okay, like in one compartment there'd be like your meat, which would be like, you know, like your Salisbury steak, which is a hamburger with gravy on it, right? And then the next one there's like corn with a little thing of butter. The next one there's mashed potatoes, and there's a dessert, and I don't know what else is in there, but like, and then on top of that is this cellophane plastic paper, and you take it out of the box and you stick it in the oven at a certain temperature in a certain period of time, and then miraculously all the various individual things are done at the same time, right? That's Genesis chapter 4 happening right there. It's amazing, okay? So the TV dinner was an incredible technological advancement in my youth. Now, should we or should we not engage with that new technology? Should we adopt it or should we say, danger, stay away from it? Well, we need to discern our way forward regarding this new piece of advancement that people are putting in front of us, okay? So, here's what the TV dinner offered. It offered a way forward regarding food where you didn't have to go shopping and really like put much thought into it, okay? It took a whole bunch of time and efficiency into your shopping. It also made it such that in the evening, after everybody is working all day, you don't have to come home and spend 30 minutes to an hour and a half taking raw ingredients and making it into something for everybody to eat, right? It saves you a ton of preparation time at dinner. It also, after dinner is completed, saves you a ton of time cleaning up because there are no dishes. There's just the plastic tray that you can put in the trash, okay? So it makes life easier. Everybody nods and says yes. It makes life more efficient. Everyone nods and says yes. Now, should we adopt this moving forward? Because it's obviously convenient. It's a time saver. Well, should we adopt it or not? Here's the question. Does this TV dinner, piece of technology and advancement, does this advance the purposes of God among us or not? Well, let's think about that. Let's reflect on that. What is food? Food, in my understanding, is way more than just a utilitarian way of inhabiting or incarnating calories for energy, right? God could have made food utilitarian. He could have made it just like get it in and then go do your thing. But he made it extravagant on purpose. Like, he made it way better and way more awesome than it needed to be. Why? Because food is something that it draws people together. It brings people together in a unique way, such that when a family or a couple or friends are preparing food, the food is the thing that draws us together and creates a space for us to hang out. And then when we're eating the food together, there's like a shared celebration of being together, and we all kind of worked on the thing, and now we get to talk and look each other in the eyeball because we've all been out doing our thing around the table, and we get to connect. And then after the food is eaten, then there's this thing called cleanup, which takes some time, right? And now somebody's at the sink doing dishes, and somebody's drying, and somebody's wiping the table, and we're like, it's mandatory togetherness time, right? And so food has a way of drawing people together in God's economy. So for family time, I would say that the TV dinner probably does not advance the purposes of God regarding food in and among our family. I wouldn't check that box that, yeah, this is a good thing. Let's look at another box, right? Does this advance the purposes of God related to me and the environment, okay? Which sometimes we talk about here, and we need to probably a little bit more. But is it a beneficial thing if 350 to 400 million Americans all adopt the TV dinner approach to food? Okay, if we did, we'd all be surrounded by trash mountains everywhere because there's so much more packaging and things that are required there, right? So it's probably not the greatest thing if we all wholesale 7 days a week, three meals a day, adopt the TV dinner approach to food. Doesn't check that box. How about health? Because we're stewards of our body, right? I don't know the specifics. I don't even know if TV dinners are still a thing, but I'm just speculating that the sodium content in one TV dinner is enough to supply a village of people with salt for 2 weeks, right? There's a whole lot of stuff going in there to give it a shelf life, okay? So it's probably like if I just lived and consumed those things exclusively for a long period of time, like that's not going to be a good thing for me as a steward of my body, right? So does the TV dinner advance the purposes of God in my life and in my family? I would have to say, well, in a lot of ways, no, it doesn't, right? So we have to discern our way there, right? Because everybody wants to market it to you. They want to sell it to you. And if you believe the lie of just convenience is the only thing, you might just do it. But you'd be missing out on a whole bunch of life that God intended us to live. So here's where me and my family landed regarding the TV dinners. You ready? And you can land wherever you want to land. But here's where my family growing up landed. We only did TV dinners when my parents were going to go out and have like a date night, which they didn't do all the time. But when they did, I'm just speculating that on date night, they didn't want to spend a ton of time cooking for us because that would just add to the stress level. It's supposed to be a restful night for them. They need to go out. And so on those nights, they wouldn't cook, so there wouldn't be any cleanup for them when they got home from their date because that wouldn't be fun to look forward to after the date. They wanted it clean. They wanted it convenient. So my brother and I would go to the store and we would get the novelty experience of getting a TV dinner and getting our sodium uptake for a year, right? We would do that very sporadically because it allowed the convenience of it to make sense to get my parents what they needed, but also to get me and my brother fed, right? So that's how we discerned our way forward regarding this new technology and how we would or would not use it, okay? And with that same approach, we need to engage most things that are around us. One last thing, real quick before I'm done. Facebook became a thing when I was in, I think, my early 20s. And there came a time where Facebook like just really, like it started to catch on. And all my friends started saying, Brian, you need to get on Facebook. That's how we're all connected. And I had a decision to make, right? Is Facebook evil? Avoid it. Danger, right? Or is it, yeah, this is a cool new thing. Let's just try it, right? I thought, no, I can't do that. As a follower of Jesus, I need to discern my way forward. And so I thought about it. I considered it. I thought about what it was and what it did, and I decided, like all my friends are doing it, high fives for them, I decided that for me, it was good for me personally to not engage in that technological platform. Now here's why. Because I know how I'm wired. I've lived with me for a long time. And even in my early 20s, I had like 20 some years of experience with me. Here's what I knew. That if I were connected to a whole bunch of people, I would not do a great job of following up with all those people. Because I was in college ministry, right? And I saw just college students come, you're with them, you love them, and then they graduate and they go, right? And they come and they're a part of your life and they graduate and they go. Hundreds of students in, hundreds of students out, hundreds in, hundreds out. Here's what I reasoned, right, in advance. This was what my decision was based on. I knew that I had a significant place in the life of so many of these people that I was ministering to. And I knew that if they friended me on Facebook, right, and if the friend requests keep coming in, and if the messages keep coming in, hey, Brian, how you doing, how's life, all this stuff, I am not going to be able to keep up with all of that, okay? And now I observe from the other end, if I, having a significant place in their life, do not a year, 2, 5 years later follow up with them when they check in with me, that's going to do something to them that I don't want to do to them. It's going to communicate a message to them that I don't care about them, I don't like them, I don't see them, that I don't want to communicate that message. And the way that I solved that problem is I said, this is not the technology for me, right? So what I do, this is how God has wired me. I love to be engaged with the people that God has put right in front of me, right? I know in my conscience that I'm supposed to walk through life with and to use my gifting for your sake and receive from your giftings. I'm supposed to do that with the people that are right around me. That just keeps things simple for me. And so before the Lord, like that's where my conscience has allowed me to go regarding social networking platforms, right? I don't do any of it because I know me. And it wouldn't be good for me, and it wouldn't be good for you, right? So don't try to find me on Facebook or Instagram or anywhere, because you ain't gonna do it, right? But my wife, on the other hand, she's all over Facebook. She's got like 15,000 friends, and somehow she's able to keep up with them. Why? Because she's different than me. She's a different creature with different habits and different abilities, and she's like, she can keep up with all that stuff, and people don't get mad at her, right? It serves to be a connecting tool for her, to which I say, awesome, high five. I'm so glad that you are able to utilize that for good, but I know that I couldn't, right? And so what I say is we all have freedom, right, before the Lord to be wherever we need to be, right? And then to live unapologetically from that place. But the first question is always, is this piece of technology going to advance the purposes of God in my life, or is this going to detract from that? And that's where we begin, and a whole bunch more to come. And I guarantee you, we're going to go to some places that you don't think we're going to go. So I hope you don't think this series is lame, because I'm really excited about it, right? So I'm just putting it out there. Just want to say on the record, this series is not lame. Okay. I'm just teasing. You know it's not lame. Okay. So, band, come on up. We're going to sing, and I want to pray for us because, yeah, the Lord wants us to become fully image-bearing in all of our capacities. And so we're going to have to grow in wisdom, we're going to have to grow in discernment, and then we're going to have to continue to grow in skill to do the things that he made us to do, to utilize the technologies we're supposed to utilize, to ultimately just picture him and to make him known in all the things that we say and that we do and that we create. What a privilege it is. Let's pray. Father in heaven, thank you for including us in this beautiful design called creation. God, in including us in this story that starts in a garden and ends in your city, where we will get to live, where we'll get to be forever and ever. God, we so look forward to that. But God, in the meantime, between the garden and the city, you have work for us to do. You want to grow us, you want to make us fully human, and you want us to live out this calling to be your image bearers in all the ways that you've made us to do it. So Father, would you grow us to be a wise and discerning and reflective, deeply thinking people so that we can engage with the world around us and do the things that you've called us to do in the ways that are good. Father, for your glory, for our joy, and for the blessing of all people around us, we ask you to do it, and we believe that you will. It's in Jesus' name that we said, amen.